It is Thursday, November 7th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 33rd season of entertainment presents the Broadway musical Memphis, November 16th at 8 p.m. in the Fort Smith Convention Center. Memphis, set in the underground clubs of the 50s, follows a radio DJ who wants to change the world and a club singer ready for her big break. Tickets and more information are available at uafs.edu.
Ahead on this edition of Ozark, stories of Elizabeth Richardson, the founder of the now 50-year-old Disability Services Organization.
Plus, Veterans Day has been celebrating the heroism of those that serve America since President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed November 11th, the holiday, in 1919.
And a celebration of the mind, an event this Saturday honors a man who brought mathematics to many through his column, Mathematical Games. We'll have more on both revelries ahead on Ozarks at Large.
But first, Attorney General Dustin McDaniel announced yesterday the establishment of a task force to combat forced labor and sex trafficking in Arkansas. Its creation was part of the Human Trafficking Act, which was passed this year by the state legislature.
This is not just a problem in Central America and big cities. It is an Arkansas problem. It occurs on our interstates. It occurs in our towns. It occurs in our neighborhoods. And those of us here today have worked for years to raise awareness about this vast problem, and we have worked to mobilize the resources to prevent the problem in Arkansas.
40 people will serve on the task force. Most are with law enforcement or nonprofits that work to help victims. McDaniel says they'll lay out a plan to combat the problem, share information, and train police and judicial officials on the best ways to identify people and groups involved.
Most of those on this task force are on the front lines in the fight against human trafficking. They represent a diverse cross-section of our state, and they are all united with one goal: to improve Arkansas's response to human trafficking now and in the future, and to work cooperatively to end this crime.
The task force will hold its first meeting November 19th at the Capitol.
The Springdale Public Library will be closed for 4 days beginning next Monday. Marcia Ransom, the library's director, says the closure is necessary so roughly 160 units of metal shelvings can be replaced.
It's a very large project. It holds about 60,000 items, mostly books in this case. So when that shelving arrives, the old shelving has to be torn down and removed, and the books have to be taken off the shelves before that can be done. And then once the new shelving is installed, the books have to be replaced. So when we looked at that logistically, that's 4 days' work. And as unfortunate as it is to close the library, that's about the only way it's going to get done.
She says replacing the current hodgepodge of old and mismatched shelving that wasn't replaced in the last renovation in 1999 is part of a larger ongoing renovation effort at the library.
We've recarpeted about half the building. We've repainted throughout. Just this morning, a crew came in and replaced some of our new, more decorative type light fixtures. And also we're adding new light fixtures to our gallery area where we'll be installing a cafe in one side. So some of the renovations have been long coming, needed to do some of these things for a long time. When the economy was struck in 2008, it was probably about the time that some of these things were needing to be done, but wasn't a good time to spend money.
While the renovation won't add additional space, Ransom says it helps keep the library an attractive and appealing place for residents to spend their time. The overall renovation project will be drawn out at least through spring.
Author Joyce Carol Oates will give a free reading in Fayetteville in a few months. Oates has written more than 50 novels and dozens of short story collections, children's and young adult books, essays, and poetry collections. The reading will take place at 7 p.m. April 21st at the Fayetteville Town Center. The reading will be free and open to the public as part of the University of Arkansas Programs and Creative Writing Program's Distinguished Reader Series. Over the course of the last half century, 40 of Oates' books have been included in the New York Times list of notable books of the year.
The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality is opening its latest round of grant funding aimed at reducing diesel emissions in the state. The department has made available just more than $197,000 in the Go Red program for this year. Public and private entities and nonprofit organizations are eligible for the funding. Proposals are due by 4:30 p.m. on the last day of the month, and proposals will be accepted accepted beginning December 31st and continuing through the end of April or until the funds are expired. Those receiving GoRed funds are tasked with reducing diesel emissions by using measures such as exhaust controls, engine upgrades, idle reduction technologies, and engine, vehicle, or equipment replacement. Projects receiving money from ADEQ must be complete by August 29th of next year.
There will be a fourth party represented on the 2014 ballot in Arkansas. Yesterday, the Office of Arkansas Secretary of State Mark Martin announced that the Green Party of Arkansas has turned in enough verified signatures to gain ballot access in the state. According to the office, 11,166 signatures were verified on the party's petition, and only 10,000 signatures were needed. The final step for the certification of the party is for Green Party officers to file an affidavit to the Secretary of State's office, affirming that the party does not advocate or otherwise condone the overthrow of or treason against the United States government.
Walmart is expecting to roll out a new store format. According to documents submitted to the Bentonville Planning Commission, the retailer wants to develop the northwest corner of 14th Street and Walton Boulevard with a convenience store. The location will be a pilot project to test the store concept and will be built with 8 fuel pumps in 4 fueling islands.
The city of Fayetteville will hold its fall bulky waste cleanup this Saturday. The cleanup will be held from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Woodland Junior High, as well as the Church of Christ on West Center Street. The cleanups are for disposal of large, bulky waste only and not for normal household waste. For a list of waste accepted at the cleanup, visit the city's website, accessfayetteville.org.
The Fort Smith Police Department and the Arkansas United Community Coalition tonight will hold a bilingual forum in order to help build awareness in the immigrant community about their rights and public safety. The meeting is scheduled to take place from 6:30 until 8:30 at the Fort Smith Adult Education Center at 501 South 20th Street.
The Razorback soccer team ended its season last night with a 1-0 loss in the Southeastern Conference quarterfinal match to the top-seeded Florida. It was the first quarterfinal match for the program since 1996. The Razorbacks end the season at 5-6 in conference play and 13-8 overall.
Check on your supply of firewood. Mostly clear tonight. Lows around 29 in northwest Arkansas. Lows around 37 for the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow. Highs from 64 to 67. Clear tomorrow night. Not as cold. Lows tomorrow night around 43. This is Ozarks at Large. One of the most popular American mathematicians of the 20th century was native Oklahoman Martin Gardner. His column, Mathematical Games, ran for 25 years in the magazine Scientific American and inspired countless readers to become more familiar with math and thousands of others to pursue a career in mathematics or a mathematics-related field. Saturday, in honor of Gardner, who died in 2010, the University of Arkansas's Department of Mathematical Sciences will host the 3-hour Celebration of the Mind. Puzzles, activities, and games will be set up for families to explore the ways math can not only inform, but entertain. Edmund Harris is an assistant clinical professor in the Department of Mathematical Sciences at the U of A, and he's an organizer of Saturday's Celebration of the Mind on the university campus. Edmund says Martin Gardner's puzzles serve not only as an inspiration for this weekend's event, but also as a way to involve more people in mathematics.
Because they got mathematical ideas out there, sort of not from the top, but from the bottom. It was something that somebody could stumble across, and it became theirs. Solving this puzzle, it wasn't something that had been set by a teacher or demanded by society. It was just something you found and you enjoyed working on. And that has led many into the quest for different, more and more interesting puzzles and more difficult puzzles. And mathematics is a great way to find more puzzles.
So part of the idea behind the Celebration of the Mind is maybe you won't turn everyone onto a career of mathematics, but certainly exposure will be there.
Yeah, well, there's sort of two goals. Firstly, to show people that mathematics has more faces than just sitting with a pile of algebra problems in front of you. And secondly, to try and find those people who might be interested. And I think, you know, if you liken it to English, in school you study books, but that maybe not enough to develop a true love of reading. But there's lots of opportunities. We're sitting just opposite the library, where people can find the interest, you know, you can pick up a book and that be something you love. For mathematics, it's harder to find those sort of things which are out for people to discover for themselves. And so the goal is to have something in the community where people can turn up and see this other face and maybe find, you know, some individuals might find, hey, this is what I really want to be doing. This is really exciting.
So taking that analogy with English, if in school you're given a volume of Ernest Hemingway, but that doesn't really get you excited, but then you discover another author at the library and it opens up a completely different world. Are there those sorts of opportunities for mathematics?
I believe so. I think many of the booths and activities we have are exactly that sort of thing, whether it's playing with tiles or looking at how pulleys can increase your strength, or there's a wide range of different things. We also have a booth that talks about how Google works.
The search engine?
Yes.
How does it work? I've wondered this.
Well, it's
I get a million results, and it always tells me in like 0.8 seconds.
Well, that aspect of it, that's the true magic. But they very efficiently managed to do some sophisticated mathematics. In fact, Sergey Brin's father is a mathematician, and there's really some nice mathematical results, which firstly allow the first edition of PageRank, if you will, that algorithm was based on this idea that you look, here's a website, how good is it? Well, we don't know. Well, you look at what websites link to it, but you don't know whether they're any good. But what you can do is just look, you have a website which has a lot of good websites linking to it, then you say that's a good website and you give credit, extra credit for its links coming out. Now, this sounds like we've just become circular, but actually there's a way of setting up this problem so you can sort of, you start off saying all websites are equal, and then you give credit to the ones with more links, but then you sort of iterate on this. So you say the ones which are now better in this first iteration are going to be, their links are more valuable. And so if you have 1,000 links from sites which don't have anything linking to them, that's not going to give you much benefit in this second iteration.
Sure.
And there's a mathematical result which says that if you sort of keep doing this process, it won't start waving all about wildly. It will actually settle on a particular value. In fact, you can jump straight from the data to that value, and that gives you an ordering of the sites, which are more relevant, which are more regarded. One of the reasons that Google did better is that this algorithm is a lot harder to game. It's a lot harder to push your site up these rankings.
To manipulate.
Yeah. I mean, as, of course, the clever people out there, so there's a sort of arms war between Google trying to keep the results better.
Right.
And search engine optimization companies trying to get their company to the top of the listings, but these sort of techniques are far harder. You have to be more subtle in how you game them than just producing 1,000 pages pointing at one site, because that will not be so valuable.
Safe to say that we all use math, whether we know it or not, every day.
That's certainly true. I think it's can actually be oversold a little bit.
Really?
I
use a Google search every day.
Yeah. I think there are huge ways in which mathematics affects our lives. But I think you don't need to know about the mathematics to use Google search.
Sure.
The analogy I like to draw here is to driving a car. You don't need to know anything about the engine to drive a car.
Right.
And you certainly don't need to know all about how to fix it up. But it's worth knowing a little bit in order to, if you can change the oil and check your tires, suddenly you can reduce the costs and you can keep your car working a lot longer. So I think we use mathematics, but we don't need to know it to use it. The case here is but knowing a little bit about it can enable you to work in the world in a more sophisticated manner, in a more reliable manner, because you know a little bit more. You don't need to know how to write how to produce Google in order to benefit from it. But there's right. a little bit of interest there.
When people walk into the Celebration of the Mind on Saturday, what are they going to see?
They're going to see a room full of different booths, all exploring different aspects of mathematics. We've talked about several of them here. They're going to see the Math Club screen printing T-shirts with mathematical patterns. And there will be a door draw to see who gets to take one of those T-shirts away. They will see wall of mathematical art. They will see lots of mathematical fun and games. And hopefully they will also see lots of people enjoying mathematics. And one of the things I've seen before that I hope to see again is the wonderful sight of parents having to pull their children away from mathematics.
Now, these booths will be created by whom?
The booths have been created by the grad students in the math department. And so as well as this being an activity where we want to reach out to the wider community, it's something that we're using to build community within our department. So everyone from the faculty to the grad students, there are many undergrads and math majors coming along to help out. So it's something that we're really putting on as a whole department, rather than just something that's being put on by a few individuals.
Edmund Harris is an assistant clinical professor in the Department of Mathematical Sciences at the University of Arkansas and an organizer of this weekend's Celebration of the Mind. The Celebration of the Mind will take place Saturday from 11 until 2 inside the Verizon Ballroom in the Arkansas Student Union on the University of Arkansas campus. The event is free and open to the public.
Come next spring, a little over 2 acres of land, right in the heart of Fayetteville, will be turned back into its original form, farmland. Thanks to an anonymous gift, the land now belongs to Appleseeds, an organization that inspires healthy living through garden-based education, teaching children about fruits and vegetables. They believe that healthy living begins with children. Natalie Freeman is the program coordinator with Appleseeds and is thankful to be starting an urban education farm on this prime real estate.
Yes. Okay. So it just makes me smile thinking about where we are, because if you look in front of us, you see college, and we're right next door to Ozark Natural Foods. So everyone who's ever been to Fayetteville knows exactly where college is. And so you're driving down the road right before you get to Ozark Natural Foods coming from the mall. You see the Appleseeds teaching farm, and it'll just be a space that's lively and full of color and full of, you know, individuals from the community harvesting and planting food and community members coming out.
The farm's position next to Ozark Natural Foods is not so random, but not for the obvious reasons. See, ONF was actually a huge part in starting Appleseeds, sending individuals into classrooms.
This has always been a dream of Appleseeds. For years and years and years, individuals have talked about, we need to have a space where community members can come and grow food. And so whenever this landowner came to us and said, oh, by the way, the land is right next to Ozark Natural Foods, we were all freaking out, because this is becoming full circle, because Ozark Natural Foods plays a huge part in Appleseeds and was essentially the one who started it. And so this is just a huge move, and it is random in a sense, but we believe that it's purposeful as well.
Building on the program started by ONF, Appleseeds has grown, like a weed, in the years since its inception in 2007. Responsible for at least 3 school gardens, with a hand in even more, the Appleseeds Urban Teaching Farm will be one central hub to make school garden training accessible to all schools in the region.
So we have a 3-part plan, timeline, for this education farm. Essentially, what we want to start out with is growing a portion of this for food and having an area with an outdoor kitchen, as well as raised beds that we can grow vegetables in, and it can be an example of a school garden. And what we're doing this spring is inviting individuals, teachers, parents who are involved, to come out and learn, how do you start a school garden and how do you sustain a school garden?
The plan is to begin holding workshops next spring. Natalie says that they've had a lot of requests for the organization to come to schools to help with school gardens, but due to a small staff, they just haven't been able to get to all of them. This will alleviate some of that pressure by allowing the teachers to come to them. And beginning with the 2014-2015 school year, Appleseeds will host students as well. The hope is to entertain field trips here, to teach kids how to plant seeds, take care of plants, harvest the food, take it to the outdoor kitchen, and then learn how to cook, taking that knowledge home to their parents.
And then down the road, we want this to be a community space for everyone, a resource where you can learn how do you grow vertically, how do you, you know, have a garden on your patio if you live in an apartment. So ultimately, this will be a community resource, but we're doing it in three stages.
This land was offered to Apple Seeds just this past spring, under a year ago. They have been working on a schematic plan ever since.
We worked with, the individual who offered the land for us to use, and we have been talking to community members. You know, do you want this farm to happen? And every time we talk to people, they're like, yes, 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 make this happen. And so we've been pulling in farmers, you know, to ask them, where would you plant perennials? How would you, you know, build raised beds? So we've been basically getting ideas from everyone that we can imagine, and we've been, you know, cultivating this idea, and we're finally able to say this is going to happen.
A visual layout for the farm is available at their website, appleseedsnwa.org. As of now, the land is not ready for production and no infrastructure has been installed. A long rut can be seen running north and south on the top part of the property as preparations are beginning.
Basically, what we're doing is we're just tilling in the soil. We're trying to get a hold on the Bermuda grass and also just establish some raised beds that we will start for hopefully the spring.
Appleseeds has the land and some of the manpower, but they still need help in building the infrastructure, such as the aforementioned outdoor kitchen, which will use recycled water with a sink to wash the veggies the students harvest, teach kids how to properly slice vegetables so they can take those skills home and help their parents, in addition to many other needs.
We're also hoping to purchase some much-needed tools to be able to break this ground and build some raised beds. We're also wanting to provide a fence around this space so that it becomes a safe place for when children come to the farm. And we're also wanting to have walking paths. We need accessibility to water. All those initial infrastructure needs, we need those. And that's what we're calling on individuals to contribute even a dollar to make this happen, because every dollar means a lot to Appleseeds.
Natalie mentioned giving $1. Appleseeds has launched a Kickstarter campaign to raise the funds necessary to purchase and install the infrastructure and tools needed. There are 23 days remaining to raise their $10,000 goal. Those that give to Appleseeds campaign will receive a gift in return. Everything from a virtual high five, the opportunity to name your own plant, a magic bean with a special message, to an apple tree planted in your honor. To donate, search Kickstarter.com for Appleseeds Teaching Farm. For more information on the organization, appleseedsnwa.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
Tristan Walker challenges the idea of what a Silicon Valley innovator looks like.
There is the speaking on the phone and you happen to potentially sound white, and then meeting that person and seeing this look of awe and shock as if there was some other expectation around how you should look.
The story of an African-American entrepreneur on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen today from 3 to 6 p.m. to KUAF Public Radio.
Veterans Day is Monday, and throughout the region, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, there are a number of activities planned to mark the occasion. The annual Northwest Arkansas Veterans Day Association will host its parade in downtown Fayetteville. The parade has been a staple of the annual holiday weekend for over a decade, and this year begins at 2:30 Sunday afternoon. That's the day before the Veterans Day holiday. Steve Gray, the president of the Northwest Arkansas Veterans Day Association, says staging the parade on the 10th allows veterans to participate in the parade and still attend other events on the actual holiday.
Every year on the 11th, the Fayetteville Medical Center in here has a ceremony at 11 o'clock. And so it's difficult if you want some of those folks that are going to be involved there, like our high schools or junior high schools, or our veterans to be a part of it. So you're just adding, you know, a lot of different events on that particular day. Sunday with the square, you know, we didn't want to step on folks' businesses, you know, that might be open.
This year's route is primarily around the Fayetteville Square. Over the past years, Steve Gray says the route has been compacted.
Well, our first year, we would come down from the square, turn onto Dixon Street, and then come all the way by the the Brew Pub there on West Street. And that was too long, especially for our veterans marching, even though it was all downhill. So then we started just doing Dixon Street, and we realized, you know, regardless of how well people come in to participate, not to participate, but to be a spectator, when you have a long, single-mile-long route, it doesn't look like you've got a lot of folks there, even though you do. Mm-hmm. So by putting it in the square, we bring everybody into a central location. Plus, every activity that we have is right there.
Those other activities include a concert, which will be free at the Town Center on the square beginning at 4. The concert includes performances by the Singing Men of Arkansas and the Ozark Highlander Pipe Band. The parade itself will include veterans, military vehicles, and bands. But Steve Gray, who is also the military and veterans advisor to Senator John Bozeman, says participation in Sunday's parade is not limited to veterans.
You just have to have a vehicle or some sign or banner that is thanking our veterans. We've got the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts. We're going to line up at 1:30. A full hour before the parade, and then come up through the square, a couple left-hand turns, and then finish in front of the fire station on Center.
This year's Northwest Arkansas Parade will have women who served in the military as grand marshals.
Women have served all the way from the Revolutionary War, even if they weren't allowed to. They figured out a way to do that. Through every single war and conflict that we've had, women have been involved one way or the other, and they're expanding their role every year. So we hopefully have a couple of 93-year-old World War II veterans. Any woman who has served in the military who's hearing this, we really want you to be part of our parade. We'll have a truck if you'd like to ride or if you'd like to walk as well. But we're going to concentrate. We're going to have a 12-minute video to talk about that service over the couple of centuries that we've been a country. But so this year we're concentrating on our women.
There are other Veterans Day parades and events throughout the region this weekend. The Veterans Day Parade at Chaffee Crossing in Fort Smith is Saturday at 1:30. Participants will gather at the Chaffee Crossing Historic District. The Veterans Memorial 5K race will begin at 8 o'clock Saturday morning at the entrance of the National Cemetery in Fayetteville. The course will then extend from that entrance to Wilson Park and back. Proceeds raised by the race will go toward the expansion of the cemetery's grounds. The Eureka Springs Veterans Day Parade is Monday morning at 10. A Veterans Day ceremony will take place at the Paris Middle School in Paris on Monday, Veterans Day, from 11 until 3. And the annual Van Buren Veterans Day Parade is Monday night, beginning at 6:30 on Main Street. Steve Gray, one of the organizers of the Northwest Arkansas Parade, says almost all of the events around the region are organized by volunteers who have full-time jobs. But he says a recent experience for him reinforced the reason that the event should take place.
I guess about a month ago when I was called by some friends of mine down in Van Buren that there was a 100-year-old lady who served in World War II, and they were wanting to get her medals and have a little presentation. And she was in a nursing home, and I said, okay, that's I'd love to do that. That's fine. And we were sort of gathering up the medals, getting everything ready to go. And then I got almost an emergency phone call one Friday morning and said, she's probably not going to make it through the weekend. So I said, okay, we'll be there this afternoon. And when we got there, you know, as soon as I showed up, she was up in her chair. And I said, Seaman Smith, are you ready to re-up? We need you again. And we just had a great time. And I guess coming back from that, it just really reaffirmed that we can never forget these people.
This is Ozarks at Large.
So, Kyle, there's one more event taking place in Rogers?
Well, at the Northwest Arkansas Community College campus. This will be Monday, Veterans Day. Colonel Daniel Shoemaker, who is a retired United States Air Force, will be the guest speaker when NWACC hosts a Veterans Day program beginning at 11 on Monday. A reception will follow. The public is invited. It takes place inside the Becky Panight Student Center on the NWAC campus.
I do want to mention that on Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large, I speak with a veteran, a 92-year-old who was a combat medic. Kind of a little different twist. You know, we hear about all these men and women who are in battle or in combat. And so he was over at D-Day. He was there for D-Day, and he was there for the Battle of the Bulge. But he wasn't armed. He was armed with things like bandages and syringes and things. So,
and that'll be on Monday's Veterans Day edition of Ozark.
Yesterday's cold front served as a reminder that it is indeed fall and winter is right around the corner. It's also a reminder to be thankful that most nonprofit organizations move their fundraising events indoors during this time of year. Tonight, the Fayetteville Town Center will host the Signature Chefs Auction, which will benefit the March of Dimes. If you're in Springdale tonight, you can stop by the Art Center of the Ozarks, who will be hosting its 11th annual 5x5 art auction and jazz soiree. Guests can listen to jazz while sampling savory treats and bidding on hundreds of pieces of art that were created on 5-inch by 5-inch canvases. Also this evening, the Northwest Arkansas Team Red program is hosting a kickoff at the Shoemaker Center in Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville. The purpose of the program is to bring together people living with diabetes, as well as their friends, family, and caregivers, in an effort to address the needs of the diabetes community.
Now, if you are not worn out from all the events that take place tonight, plenty more scheduled for the rest of the month. Saturday night, the Jones Center will host Big Night, Night on the Town at the Fayetteville Town Center. That same venue will be the site of the third annual Forgotten Song Gala Tuesday night. The semi-formal dinner is organized by a group that empowers the victims of war-torn societies through self-sustainable and reproducible projects and business initiatives.
There is no shortage of events to choose from on Saturday, November 18th. Some of these include the 8th annual Ryan Murphy Cancer Benefit, Circle of Life Hospices Rock the Bridge, and the Celebrity Waiter Crystal Anniversary Gala, A Night to Remember.
Thursday, November 21st, CASA of Northwest Arkansas will host its annual Light of Hope event, and the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter will host its Fresh Start Art Auction. And November 22nd, the Sunshine School and Development Center will host a very special art show, and the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank has organized its Jewels of Giving Gala.
If you are missing outdoor fundraising events, you'll have an opportunity to get outside Saturday, November 23rd, for the Northwest Arkansas St. Jude Give Thanks Walk event at Arvest Ballpark.
And as we get closer to the end of 2013, we near the end of a historic year for another nonprofit organization, the Elizabeth Richardson Center. It's been celebrating its 50th anniversary, and Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has this look back at the center's history.
The Elizabeth Richardson Center is a comprehensive provider of disability services in Northwest Arkansas that has been serving the needs of local residents since 1963. Marketing Director Kate Lunsford says they serve more than 600 children and adults annually at 10 locations throughout Northwest Arkansas.
We have five child development centers that serve children from 6 weeks to 5 years who have been diagnosed with any kind of developmental disability. So that's Down syndrome, autism, Williams syndrome, anything like that. Or they have some kind of developmental delay. For some reason, they're just not meeting their milestones. Maybe they were premature, maybe it's environmental. And so each of those centers provides speech therapy, physical therapy, and occupational therapy in a preschool setting with those state-approved curriculum and everything you'd find in a regular preschool. And so that's on the kids' side of it. And then for adults, we provide vocational training and community job placement. And then we also provide residential options with the goal of allowing them to live as independently as possible.
Lunsford joined the ERC about 3 years ago. After spending a decade in banking, she began searching for an opportunity to work with a nonprofit because she felt it was her turn to give back. After looking into the ERC's history, she says it has been interesting and amazing to see how the world has changed in its perception of people with disabilities during the last 50 years.
At the time that this organization started, public schools didn't serve children with disabilities at all. So their options were to stay home or to be sent away to state institutions. And so that's basically where our organization began. There was a group in Fayetteville that was led by Dr. Wade Burnside, who was a Fayetteville pediatrician at the time, along with the parents of children with special needs. And they essentially got together and decided, we need to have services here in Northwest Arkansas for these children.
Dr. Wade Burnside is much more humble about his role in the creation of the Elizabeth Richardson Center.
Well, no, I don't think I'm the reason it exists. But I guess you'd say it was a matter of being in the right place at the right time. And a number of things existed or were happening that all kind of worked together to establish a school for what we called trainable children, not educable. Educable children, an IQ level just below normal, but the trainable children, an IQ level below that.
One of the people that contributed to the creation of the center, Dr. Burnside says, was Cornelia Bowman, who taught special classes for students and saw a need for the kids who weren't being served. Dr. Burnside said it was also helpful that Wayne White, the superintendent of Fayetteville Public Schools, supported Bowman. Another contributing factor was it just so happened that Dr. Burnside's church, First United Presbyterian Church, had a mission study that year that focused on people with special needs. And finally, Dr. Burnside says, Fort Smith already had a school helping students with special needs called the Boast School. Today, Boast Incorporated still exists and serves more than 700 adults and children with disabilities on a daily basis in 34 counties in western Arkansas. Dr. Burnside says they were able to visit the school and get ideas for starting their own organization in northwest Arkansas.
The people in Fort Smith said, don't wait to find a trained teacher. Find someone who's a good teacher, who's kind, patient, loving, and go ahead and start. And your teacher can take courses to learn some of the techniques that might be helpful. So that, in a sense, gave us freedom to invite her to be the teacher. And she did accept.
The she Dr. Burnside is referring to is Elizabeth Richardson. Dr. Burnside says she was a member of his church who had been a teacher prior to getting married. At the time he approached her about returning to teaching, she was a widow. On September 29th of 1963, the school opened in the basement of Fayetteville's First United Presbyterian Church with four students. Richardson was the first teacher, and she went on to become the organization's first executive director and eventually its namesake. 10 years later, due to an increasing need for services, a school opened on Woodland Avenue with 61 children from the ages of 2 to 18. Today, this building serves as one of the ERC's child development centers, where 77 children who are 6 weeks to 5 years old attend classes each day. Bobby Nell Templeton was involved in the center in its early days. Her son Earl was able to use the ERC's services. Templeton says a doctor diagnosed her son with an arrested case of hydrocephalus.
He was there for several years at the Richardson Center here in Fayetteville. But, you know, we didn't know if we were going to be able to keep that or not. And right after Earl was born, or a few months after Earl was born, and we realized that he was going to have a problem, and we knew about the Conway Human Development Center, I filled out a form and so that if he did need to go there, that it would be possible, because they had a long waiting list always. So we, after Earl had been at the Richardson Center, I don't know, must have been about 4 years or so. I don't really remember. We got something in the mail and told us that we could bring him down for an analysis and such. And it was really hard. That's the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life.
After her husband passed away, Templeton says driving back and forth got pretty tiring for this mama, so she brought her son back to northwest Arkansas. Earl is now in his 50s and still resides in housing provided by the Elizabeth Richardson Center. Templeton and Dr. Burnside describe Elizabeth Richardson as a loyal, distinguished lady who was a saint that loved working with children. Templeton says she got to know Richardson well because she often drove her to events around the state.
Well, she didn't drive a car. And so at the 50th anniversary dinner, I mentioned that I got to go when she was going to workshops in the state or going to look at places, how they do things and all. I got to be her driver. So we developed a very good relationship. She was, she had been a public school teacher. So we really had a good time with that, and we learned some things. And coming back one day from one of our trips, she was saying something about that we just didn't have the program that we should have, and I need to do better. And I said, Ms. Richardson, you don't need to worry about that. We're growing good, you know. So she was kind of feeling like she wasn't doing her job, which was ridiculous.
Templeton, as well as her husband and son Larry, have all served time on the board. Dr. Burnside also served as a board member. People can only serve a limited number of terms. Dr. Burnside said this is one of the reasons the organization has been successful, because it ensures there are always fresh ideas coming from the board. Looking back at the past 50 years, Dr. Burnside marvels at the organization's growth.
I would never have dreamed it. It's far beyond anything we dreamed of in those days. We just wanted to get something started. I don't remember that we even thought much about growth, certainly not phenomenal growth.
One of the more recent examples of that growth is just last year. The Elizabeth Richardson Center opened a new child development center in Huntsville, making the ERC the only disability services provider serving Madison County. The Huntsville CDC can serve up to 30 children from 6 weeks to 5 years old. More information about the organization is available at ercinc.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
For the Arkansas Historic Preservation Program, an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage, I'm Rachel Silva with Arkansas's Historic Places, presenting the next Walks Through History Tour at the Mark Tree Commercial Historic District. Mark Tree is located between the St. Francis and Little Rivers in the area known as the Sunken Lands, which was created by the New Madrid earthquakes of 1811 and 1812. According to local legend, the town acquired its name from an oak tree on the bank of the Little River that was marked with an M in the 1830s by John Morrell's gang of outlaws. Mark Tree prospered after the completion of the railroad in 1883, and the timber industry dominated the local economy. The Corps of Engineers constructed the Mark Tree lock and siphons in the late 1930s to control flooding along the St. Francis River. The Walks Through History Tour begins at the Poinsett County Drainage District Office, 11 Frisco Street, at 11 a.m. on Saturday, December 14th, and is co-sponsored by the Mark Tree Chamber of Commerce. Learn more about Arkansas's historic places at arkansaspreservation.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellum. Still ahead on this edition of Ozarks, what's going on in our brains when we hear that familiar song?
But first, a few things of note in no particular order. Some congratulations to a team of civil engineering students at the University of Arkansas. They placed third in a national concrete competition. The team, made up of Kaisha Plambick and Matthew Waters, developed cylinders of pervious concrete to come in third in the 2013 American Concrete Institute's competition held in Phoenix last month. Pervious concrete is mostly used for flat surfaces such as parking lots and trails. Plambeck and Waters won $250 and will be featured in a future publication of Concrete International magazine.
Well, congratulations indeed. The Springdale Police Department will be holding a warrant amnesty week from November 12th through the 15th. This applies to Springdale Police Department warrants only. Amnesty Week, by the way, does not dismiss any charges. It does provide an opportunity for anyone with outstanding warrants to turn themselves in and be released with a court date without having to post bond. The person can then work with the judge, prosecutor, and their attorney to have the matter resolved quickly.
The Barbara Mashburn Scholarship Foundation presents a night of reggae this Saturday evening from 7 to 9:30 at Fresco Cafe and Pub in Fayetteville. The event is hosted by DJ Hodjay with a special performance by Rochelle Bradshaw. The cover is $5 for students with a valid ID and $10 for adults.
And the latest exhibition in the Walton Art Center's Joy Pratt Markham Gallery opens today, and it will run through January 25th. The opening reception tonight from 5 until 7. The exhibition, Linking the Past to the Present, features works by Oklahoma artists Anita Fields and Tony Tiger. Manuela Welloff Mann, assistant curator at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, was the guest curator for the exhibit. And another visual arts reception this evening at the Depot in Fayetteville from 7 until 9. It showcases an exhibit of John Rankin's recent photographs titled Beneath the Surface. If you were almost anywhere on the planet earlier this year, you probably heard this at least once. The French pop duo Daft Punk scored a global hit with Get Lucky this spring. It rose to at least the number three spot on charts in more than 40 countries around the world. It was on the radio, it was in movie previews, commercials, in clubs. Perhaps you didn't notice it when you first heard it, but then it grew on you, and then, depending on how frequently you heard it, the romance with the song was over. That's not an unfamiliar phenomenon, and it's one of the interesting relationships between music and the brain covered in the brand new book, On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind, by Elizabeth Margulis. Dr. Margulis is on the University of Arkansas Department of Music faculty, and she's been researching music in the brain for years. Sunday afternoon at 3:30, she'll discuss the new book at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. Yesterday, she talked to me about the intense relationship a song, played on repeat, can have with a listener. It turns out our brains can have a similar response, even if the song I may want to hear again is a piece of music you may feel ambivalent about.
That's right. I mean, there's all this work from the psychoaesthetics literature in the 1970s, which in many ways looked at these problems very differently than people look at them now. But the basic idea during that time was that there's this inverted U-shaped response to repeated presentations of a stimulus, of any kind of stimulus, not just music. So what that means is that, you know, you first come across a song on the radio. It's fine. Maybe it's not really great. It's all right. And then it's, you know, you're re-exposed to it. Maybe it's, you know, playing on a speaker out when you're out in a public space or something, or maybe it's on the radio. And it's just liking it sort of creeps up on you. You don't mean to. You didn't think it was that great. But before too long, you find yourself kind of, maybe now you're seeking it out on the dial. Maybe you download it on iTunes. And then you listen to it a lot, let's say. And now what's happened is you've reached some peak place where you like it the most. And then you start to have heard it too much, right? And then it goes down, down. This is the other side of the inverted U. And you like it less and less. So this has intrigued people because it's this kind of nonlinear response to exposures, where at first it serves to increase your sense of affiliation with whatever you're listening to, and then later on it works to just push you away even stronger.
There was a song a couple of summers ago, Call Me Maybe. Mm-hmm. First time I heard that, I hated that song. And then the exact thing. You know, a couple of months later, perhaps behind the curve of most people, suddenly I find myself humming it and kind of looking forward to it. But you're right, eventually, and it seemed like it happened between the 353rd hearing and the 354th, I couldn't hear it again.
Now, that's the thing. It might have, for you, it might have been between the 340th and 350th hearing, right?
Right.
But for someone else, it really depends on how familiar you are with the style that that piece comes from. How many songs you've heard by that artist and such, and also personality factors like how novelty seeking you mm-hmm. are and how much you're interested in complex kind of things. So that curve can shift around or spread, flatten out or get narrower depending on all these other background kind of factors. But, you know, the interesting thing to me is not that there's all this variability, because of course there's variability. We're talking about this really subjective phenomena like liking music. I mean, that's such a, you know, vague concept. But the fact that you can find these reliable patterns behind all of these different kinds of experiences of music preference. I mean, to me, that's really surprising that you can find this inverted U-shaped curve at all, and that it seems to be so robust across different listeners. It's quite amazing.
Lisa Margulis is the author of the brand new book, On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind, and is a member of the University of Arkansas Music Department faculty. She'll discuss her new book Sunday afternoon at 3:30 at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. And we'll have a longer conversation with her about the book on our Monday, November 18th edition of Ozarks at Large.
Pianist Helene Grimaud was not immediately drawn to Brahms' second piano concerto.
I've often described that phenomenon as something which is equivalent to, you know, the piece knocking on the door from the inside, sort of saying, hello, I'm there. Now you need to pay attention, and now we're meant for one another.
Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of Off Note. Join me Friday, 11 to noon, for more from that conversation, plus Brahms' piano concerto number 2.
It is Thursday, November 7th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So here's the deal. My mouth is going to move, but it's Kevin Kinder talking.
Kevin Kinder, who covers music for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And is perhaps the definitive source for those things in Northwest Arkansas, or at least one of them other than KUAF.
I would agree with
that. So he's going to tell you all about a musician named Mac Miller, who he says is a rare artist who had an album hit number one on the Billboard charts without a record label.
Interesting.
He's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, not Kansas. And his first full-length album in 2011, Blue Side Park, came after several independent EPs. His second album, Watching Movies with the Sound Off, a title I absolutely love, was released in June of this year. And he will be here tonight, courtesy of the University of Arkansas Headliner Concerts Committee, which doesn't mean that you can't go. Students get in free.
And then
you get in for $27.
Much like the Flaming Lips concert last year.
Yeah, right.
Right.
This will happen at 9 o'clock at Barnhill Arena on campus. And you can get tickets at the Walton Arts Center for $27.
All right. Very good.
Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Red Star.
Where and why Red Star?
Why? Because Red Star is a beautiful place.
Okay.
And where is just inside Madison County, almost in Newton County. But if you're in Red Star, you're still in Madison County, just on the border.
All right. Never heard of it.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm.
There's a softball field there.
Okay.
Okay.
I guess there's a team there, too, then.
Not really.
No.
No.
Well, okay. Typo Fest, an event celebrating 10 years of Typo Magazine, will take place November 22nd and 23rd in Fayetteville. The two-day literary event will include a reading, talk, and Q&A with translator Guillermo Parra, discussing Venezuelan poetry. Adam Clay will talk about parents writing with children, and Ann Boyer and Sandra Simmons will present a program. The event will be sponsored by Artemis. For more, artemis.org.
Friday night, tomorrow night at 10 on Shades of Jazz on KUAF, Robert Ginsberg will talk with jazz violinist Christian Howes. He was voted first place in the Downbeat Critics poll for Rising Star. He'll discuss his life in music, from beginning as a classical prodigy to winding up as an international jazz sensation. Shades of Jazz, tomorrow night at 10 on KUAF. Want to thank the Fayetteville Public Library and the annual gathering of groups for inviting me back this year to host
the One Book, One Community.
Right. It's the final event in the One Book, One Community event. And Pete Early, who is the author of Crazy, A Father's Search Through America's Mental Health Madness, will be at the library with me. It's the third year I've done this, and it's a conversation, and it's for many of the book clubs that are in Northwest Arkansas. They all come together for this one conversation tomorrow. So thank you. Also want to remind you that a week from tonight, I will be hosting the Art Night Out event at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. That is from 7:30 until 11. You can find out more at Crystal Bridges. It's going to be a lot of fun. And next Wednesday, in 6 days, I'm honored to host the luncheon for National Philanthropy Day in Rogers at the Embassy Suites.
You are very busy. I don't know how you do it.
I don't either. Don't stop and think.
I sure don't.
That's the secret.
Are the Art Night Out events, is that one of those, is there food?
There's food,
and stuff
there's
involved?
Music, there's conversation. It's a good time, and this will be the second year they've asked me to host one in November. I'm looking forward to it. I've talked with Sarah at Crystal Bridges about this year's, and it's going to be a lot of fun and some exciting artistic things. That if they come off, they're very ambitious, and I think she's going to be able to pull it off, will be a lot of fun. So that's a week from tonight at Crystal Bridges.
All right. Well, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
You'll be back tomorrow with Antoinette Grajeda.
I will indeed, yes.
Okay.
And then you and I on Sunday.
Sunday morning. Yeah.
Very good. For weekend Ozarks at Large.
Until then, thank you so much for listening. Have a good Thursday.